Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Halfway through the Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuke, Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend. He's a prospects expert, Guy Flaming. He's also the host of the Pipecast podcast. Guy, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks, fellas. Good to be back.
Our pleasure to have you, Guy. Obviously, we're going to want to talk to you about the Winnipeg Jets and some of their young prospects. But before we get to a Jets prospect, there's a player we were just talking about previous segment, and that's a guy who played out in the Western Hockey League with the Seattle Thunderbirds. That's Shea Theodore. He's obviously now not in the WHL anymore, making an impact for the Anaheim Ducks and the San Diego Gulls of the AHL. But having covered the Western Hockey League in depth like you do, just how attractive of a prospect is a guy like Shea Theodore, you know, when he was coming out of junior hockey?
Yeah, well, I think the expectations were that it wouldn't take him very long to get into the NHL and carve out a niche for himself to stick. The Ducks have so many good, strong, young defensive prospects that maybe it took a little bit longer for him than it would have with other franchises. But no question, with his size, mobility, and two-way play, Shea Theodore was a very good junior player, and I think the expectations are that he'll be that at the NHL level as well.
Guy, we wanted to go over some of the Jets prospects, some of which are currently playing in the WHL. We wanted to start off with Michael Spacek of the Red Deer Rebels. He's having a good year this year for them. What can you tell us about his development?
Yeah, I think he is having a really good year. He's taken his offensive game to another level, a natural progression. I mean, he was a rookie in the league last year and was just shy of a point-per-game player. He's well past that this season with 23 goals in just 45 games and 65 points overall. I think most people have seen him play over the course of the last couple of years for the Czech Republic at the World Juniors. I think it's pretty well known what he provides. He's not a big guy, but there's lots of skill, and he's shifty and handles the puck really well, has a terrific shot. He's good one-on-one. There's lots to like about him. He's not the biggest guy in the world, and that's probably the only knock on him, but I don't think he's too small to play and have success at the NHL level. He's one to watch, I think.
Guy, sticking with the WHL, going to Jansen Harkins, a player I was fortuitous enough to watch play for the Moose for six games last season. What have you seen from him playing with the Prince George Cougars this season?
Just a consistent guy for the Cougars. And I don't know how offensive he's going to be at the next level, but at the junior level, he's a force, and he's really strong, solid player. I think, you know, he might be a second-line guy at best, might even turn out to be a third-line player at the NHL level. I think he can kill penalties. But he's going to be a heart-and-soul sort of player, a real, bring-your-lunch-bucket-to-work kind of guy, blue-collar, all those sort of cliches. He's going to be one of those types of guys. And listen, you've got your bricks, and you've got your mortar, and one of those mortar players that every team needs a guy like this.
Guy Flaming is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Guy covers the world of junior hockey and prospects in general. He's the host of the Pipecast podcast, which of course you can find on iTunes. Guy, you know, when you talk about the Jets prospects, you know, we obviously spend, you know, a lot of time focused on the Jets and the system and the pipeline from the, you know, the AHL and junior hockey right through the NHL level. You know, looking at it sort of from the macro point of view, from an overarching point of view, how would you describe the Jets prospect system? Is it, you know, one of the best in the NHL, you know, coming up through the NHL, or is it somewhere sort of middling, or is it somewhere where the Jets really need to make some improvements?
No, I like the way the Jets draft, and I think they've been aggressive in getting high-end offensive players. They've rounded it out with there's a lot of good goaltenders in the system that they've drafted over the years, and they've guys like Chase DeLeo, for example, just maybe under the radar, swing for the fences sort of guys in the mid round who have a lot of upside, might have some challenges, but if they can get there, they're going to be big contributors. I actually really like the way the Jets have drafted since coming back to the NHL, and I think we've seen a number of those players making contributions at the NHL level already, and lots of young guys still along the way. So, no, I'm a big supporter of the way that the Jets have been drafting.
Gee, Tucker Poolman is a player that Jets fans are really excited about. Defenseman was drafted in the fifth round in 2013. He's 23 years old now. He's in his third year with the University of North Dakota, won a national championship with UND last year. He's got 22 points in 28 games. A lot of Jets fans were hoping that he'd turn pro after last year, and he's in his third year, as I mentioned. Just how ready do you think Tucker Poolman is to make that jump to pro?
Yeah, I think he could if he wanted to. His younger brother joined North Dakota this year, and I think that probably played a role in him sticking around, whether he returns again for a senior year or not. I'm not sure if he'll do that. But at his size, the physical demands of a professional game and the way he plays, he's ready for that. I don't think that's going to be a challenge for him. So, there'll be some time to get acclimated to the pro speed and things like that. But I think Tucker Poolman is a terrific prospect. I went down to North Dakota a couple of years ago to watch them play, and he stood out for me. And it was really notable at the time that he was playing both forward and defense for, at that time, Dave Haxtell was still the head coach at North Dakota. So there was a bit of Dustin Byfuglien in him there, where he was had some versatility like that to play at either up front or on the blue line. And a big, strong, physical player, and he's chipping in offensively as well at a pretty good clip. I mean, he's just shy of a point-per-game player this year as a third-year member at North Dakota. So I think all the arrows are pointing up for Tucker Poolman.
What can you tell us about Matteo Gennaro? He was a late pick, seventh round, I believe, in 2015, plays for the Calgary Hitmen in the WHL. What can you tell Jets fans about him?
I think he's a bit of a late bloomer. He's the current WHL Player of the Month, so that's notable, and really having a breakout year offensively in this league. Fernando Pisani's cousin, and I think there's some similarities in maybe what we should expect from him at the next level. Maybe a depth guy who can chip in with some unexpected secondary offense as a pro. I don't think you're going to rely on him necessarily to be a guy that carries the offense for anybody. But I think he's going to be one of those depth guys that can contribute. And with 33 goals this year in 51 games and still, 15, 18, 20 games still to play, I'm interested to see how he does and if he can help the Calgary Hitmen get back into the playoffs. And once, if that happens, once they're there, what sort of postseason he has. Because he hasn't had a ton of playoff experience being a member of the Prince Albert Raiders and the Calgary Hitmen and so far in the Dub.
Yeah, Guy, Fernando Persani, the hero of the 2006 playoffs for the Oilers.
That's right.
We wanted to ask you about a guy who used to play for the Calgary Hitmen. He was drafted by the Jets in the fifth round in this past 2016 draft, Jordy Stallard. He's unfortunately injured and out for the rest of the season. He now plays for the Prince Albert Raiders. What do you like about his game and how it's going to translate to the pro level?
I think he's similar in ways to Gennaro, in fact. More of a depth guy with some size. And, I think he's going to be a two-way sort of player. I think he plays with some edge, which is good to see in a guy that's, 6'2 and 190-ish pounds. You hope that there's some physical play from a guy with that sort of frame, and he does deliver that. And I actually like that trade for Prince Albert when they made the swap with the Calgary Hitmen, because I thought Stallard was a good player. I don't think he's going to light the world on fire, but he could be a contributor and might take him a couple of years, maybe three, once he turns pro to actually get, and he has to keep on developing. But he's got an outside shot, I think, at sticking at the NHL level.
We've been specific in our players that we've asked you about. Is there anyone that we haven't asked you about that Jets fans should be aware of as someone who should be on their radar?
Yeah, I think Eric Foley is probably that guy. He's the second-year player at Providence College this year, and a point-per-game guy was pretty effective, I thought, in a depth role for the United States at the World Junior Championship. Didn't play or didn't produce a lot of points, but was very physical and a catalyst in that regard for the U.S. at the World Junior Championship, but had a really strong season in his draft year when he was taken in the third round by the Jets, and took him a little bit of time to get acclimated at the college level in his first year. But this year, as I said, point-per-game guy for Providence College. He's one to watch, power forward.
And good timing on that one, because I think he had three goals and an assist last night for them.
No, look at that. Good, perfect. Yeah, you know, I think he's going to be a pretty solid player.
Guy Flaming, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Guy covers the world of junior hockey on his podcast, the Pipecast Podcast, which, of course, you can find on iTunes. Guy, we'll let you go on this last question, and I apologize for putting you on the spot here. I'm not sure how close of an eye you keep on the KHL, but the Jets drafted Pavel Kraskovsky back in 2014 in the sixth round. He's playing with the men of the KHL, and he's got 17 points in 56 games played. We, of course, saw him in the World Juniors for Russia last season. You know, have you seen anything from Pavel Kraskovsky this year? And is he a prospect?
I haven't, guys. I'm sorry. I have not been following the KHL. So, no, he's completely off my radar. I apologize.
My apologies for putting you on the spot with that question there, Guy. I apologize on that one. But we do greatly appreciate the insight you provided on the remainder of the Jets prospects. And thank you for your time, Guy. We'll do it again real soon. Appreciate the update on the Jets prospects.
All right, sounds good, fellas. Thanks.
Take care, Guy. Thanks very much.
All right.
That's
Guy
Flaming. He's the host of the Pipecast Podcast, covering the world of junior hockey, which you can, of course, find on iTunes. Let's head to break. When we return, we'll give an update on the both Eastern and Western Conference playoff races. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thanks to Guy Flaming for joining us, giving us an update on some of the Jets prospects. In case you missed any of that, I understand, Dave Minuk, you're going to put that up on illegalcurve.com?
Yeah. No, Jets fans always appreciate insight into players that they don't get a chance to see regularly. So Guy's insight is always appreciated, and I'll definitely have that up on illegalcurve.com in addition to the show.
Yes.
But we'll cut that out specifically for Jets fans so they can hear an update on some of those prospects.
Oh, lovely. This segment of the program brought to you by Keener Jerseys. So if you want to go get a Winnipeg Jets Eric Foley jersey, you can do that at Keener Jerseys, because they're known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or check out their new showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. That's at Keener Jerseys. Coming back to do a update on the NHL standings, the playoff standings. Winnipeg Jets, of course, now 6 points behind the Los Angeles Kings for that final playoff spot in the Western Conference in the wild cards. The Kings and the Predators tied with 60 points. The St. Louis Blues have now leapfrogged the Nashville Predators again into third spot in the Central Division, as they're playing some good hockey since dismissing Ken Hitchcock. They've won three in a row. The Jets, 6 points back. All the teams, of course, have games in hand on them, which is a significant issue for the Jets as we enter into the final 25 games of their season. Of course, they have, I believe it's now 6 games before they have their bye week. And as we've said for the last, you know, couple weeks, this period, this stretch right now is the make or break for the Jets. And so far, it's been a bit of a break, and they got 6 games to maybe turn things around. But trending in the wrong direction, I believe, is how you would describe it. The Calgary Flames, 1 point behind the Kings and the Predators for these final wild card spots. The wheat is separating from the chaff a little bit in the Western Conference wild card race, as there's now 5 points between the Canucks and the Flames. So the Flames are really, it looks like it's going to be a four-team race for the final two playoff spots between the Blues, the Flames, the Predators, and the Kings as we enter into the final, you know, month or 6 weeks of the NHL season. Much more interesting story in the Eastern Conference, where it really is going to go right down to the wire. The Boston Bruins hold the final wild card spot as they have 60 points right now. But between the Bruins and the last team in the Eastern Conference, that's the Detroit Red Wings and the Buffalo Sabres, there's only 6 points between all those teams. So it's really going to be a fascinating race in the East. Gentlemen, how do you see the Eastern Conference playoff race playing out? To me, the team that really is probably the most attractive standings right now, most attractive position, are the New York Islanders. They were left for dead about a month, 6 weeks ago, when they dismissed Jack Capuano. They've come in since Doug Weight has taken over as head coach, 7-1-2 in their last 10, 2 points behind the Boston Bruins with 4 games in hand.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Since the New York Islanders let Jack Capuano go and Dougie Weight has taken over, they've played some really good hockey. And as you mentioned, you know, they're right in the thick of that playoff race. And they have 4 games in hand on the Boston Bruins, and they're only 2 points behind. So it looked like the Islanders were completely done. Looked like they were ready to hit the golf course and start thinking about next year, Drew. But, you know, they've turned it around, and we know they're led by one of the best centers in the entire game in John Tavares, and they've got a pretty good supporting cast there. And especially now that Yaroslav Halak is injured and Thomas Greiss is getting the majority of those starts there.
Halak's actually down in Bridgeport.
Right. Yeah. And so, I mean, it's pretty incredible what is happening in the Eastern Conference right now. And the West is still competitive, and sure, the Jets have followed up 3 victories with 3 losses now. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, the Eastern Conference is certainly better than it's ever been. And you have a team like the Florida Panthers, who won the Atlantic Division last year, and they're fighting for a playoff spot. They've got games in hand. Mm-hmm. They're a team I think you have to watch. The Devils are on a bye week right now. They've won 6 of their last 10 games, won 2 in a row here. They're still in it. They're in 12th in the Eastern Conference, but they're only 4 points back.
Yeah.
They only have 2 games in hand on the Boston Bruins, but you got the Flyers in there. The team that's the most intriguing to me, though, is the Leafs. And the Leafs have played less games than every other team in the East but the Carolina Hurricanes and the Ottawa Senators. And we know that the Leafs have been a pretty bad team for many years now. Mm-hmm. The last time they made the playoffs was when they lost to the Bruins in the first round. So for me, the most interesting team is the Leafs, because not much was expected out of them this year. When you're talking about the Bruins and the Panthers and the Flyers, those teams expected to, at the very least, get into the playoffs. When you're talking about the Panthers, I think they were expecting to be competing for a division title again. So the Leafs are going to be an interesting one to me, because, you know, we know all the young firepower they have with Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner, William Nylander, and it goes on and on and on. They have a good veteran supporting cast as well with Kadri and Van Riemsdyk and Bozak. But that's going to be the interesting one for me, because there's an opportunity here, Drew, for 3 Canadian teams to make the playoffs.
Well, all of them in the Atlantic Division.
Right.
Because what clearly looks like it's going to happen, I mean, the Montreal Canadiens are the best team in the Atlantic by record. They have 70 points. Then the Senators, Leafs, and Bruins. The Senators have 62 points. The Leafs have 61 points. The Bruins have 60 points. Of course, the Senators and Leafs both with games in hand on Boston. But it's, what it's looking like is that those three teams are going to battle for 2 playoff spots in the Atlantic. Possibility of them get one of those teams also getting a wild card, but all the teams in the Metropolitan behind the Capitals, the Penguins, the Blue Jackets, and the Rangers, they're all battling really for wild card spots at this point in time. The Rangers, 71 points, they're pretty home free, at least as one of the wild card teams at the very least. But it's really a battle in the Metropolitan Division for that second wild card spot, and it's really going to be a fascinating race.
Yeah, you mentioned the Islanders before. I mean, wouldn't it be incredible with all the struggles they've had and all the issues they had up front and a lot of players struggling, and then Jack Capuano loses his job, and you know, the Barclays Center, the ice has been horrible. They don't know where their home is going to be a couple of years from now. They have at least 2 years left after this year's at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, but that team was in utter disarray. And as you mentioned, now they've won a couple games in a row. They've won 7 of their last 10. Mm-hmm. They've been pretty unstoppable at home. They have only lost 8 games all year at home. So the Islanders, if they
ironic
can
that they have a home ice advantage in the arena that doesn't want them anymore.
Yeah, and I mean, if they can end up squeaking in there, I mean, I think they're not going to get past the first round if they end up playing either Washington or whoever it is. But
yeah,
it would just be incredible, an amazing feat if they could even get in.
To come from that far behind, Dave. I mean, you look at the Islanders, and what they have is they have a positive goal differential of a +2, not overwhelming by any stretch, but you look at the rest of the teams that are battling for those wild card spots, everybody else is in the minuses. I mean, the Philadelphia Flyers, who we haven't even mentioned, are, you know, right 1 point behind the Bruins. They have a -22 goals against differential. Same with the Panthers. They're a -22. The Devils are at -26. The Islanders are the only team that sort of have an optimistic point of view when it comes to their goals for, goals against, which I think might help them and you know, bode well for them as they enter into their final 30 games of the season.
Well, it seems like we're having that inevitable bounce that you get when the coach is released and you end up having a new guy, you know,
bounce.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so the players know, right? The players know that there's no option other than it's on us now, because there's nobody left to fire at that point. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Andrew Ladd, someone fans here are familiar with, he's still having a fairly disappointing season. He has 18 points on the year, but he has, I think, 4 goals in his last 6 games and that 1 or 2 assists as well. So he's been playing better, and their goaltending situation seems to be resolved, which, you know, seemed to be hanging over this team for, you know, parts of last season and this season as well. So they seem to have made that decision. We're going with these two, and, you know, look, I mean, they're a team that very well could challenge. You're right, Drew. Their goal differential is +2, which is a positive considering literally. But when you're looking at the teams that are around them that have allowed so many more goals, the team that's interesting to me is Ottawa. Though I like how Ottawa's been able to kind of fly under the radar. Nobody really seems to talk about the Ottawa Senators, mm-hmm. and they just seem to keep getting it done. And even if they have a little bit of a snag, they kind of right the ship almost immediately. They don't go through like an extended period of time where they're kind of struggling. And so the Ottawa Senators to me is a team that, again, I'm not suggesting that they're going to challenge, because I just think there's too much firepower up top in the East. But I think that the Ottawa Senators are a team that nobody really seems to talk about, and nobody anticipated, I don't think, them being a real playoff team. And now you look at the Atlantic, and how good is it for Eastern Canada right now when all three of those teams are Montreal, Toronto, and Ottawa are in the playoffs? I mean, it's good for the NHL. You know, it's good for the ratings when it comes time to, you know, having playoffs and having all these Canadian teams potentially in it. So not a bad thing for the NHL. And to me, a team that's interesting is, in addition to the New York Islanders, are the Ottawa Senators.
Yeah, Guy Boucher really, I think, should be talked about as a Jack Adams nominee this year. But nobody's talking about the Ottawa Senators, to your point, Dave. I think they are one of the better stories this year in the NHL.
Yeah, and you know, it's an interesting note on the Islanders, Drew. And I don't mean to, you know, pee on the parade here, but the Ottawa Senators and the New York Islanders are playing today.
Yeah.
Two teams battling for that last wild card spot. The Islanders have played way more home games than they have away games. If you look at their schedule, the end of February, early March, they have 9 straight games on the road.
Wow.
9. So, I mean, the schedule might be something that is working against the Islanders towards the end of the season, but certainly...
9 in a row, that's a bizarre... Yeah. I mean, I wonder if there's something happening at the Barclays Center that precludes them from being there, because you don't... That's like the old circus road trip that the Blackhawks used to do early on in the season.
It's weird, though, because even the Minnesota Wild have 8 at home. Ezzy and I were talking about this after the Wild were here on Tuesday, and the Minnesota Wild play 8 at home now. Well, 7 after yesterday's game.
Well,
but
I think the Jets' longest homestand this year was 6.
Yeah, I believe so.
And I think their longest road trip was either 5 or 6 as well. So
yeah.
Having 9 in a row on the road is a scheduling quirk, I think you would say. And that's going. You're right. That's going to be a make or break point in the season.
Yeah, and you have some tough games there. It starts off with Montreal, Detroit, Columbus, and so. The schedule is not going to be easy for the Islanders, but we'll see what happens.
When we come back, Scott Burnside of ESPN.com joins us. He had a great story on Timu Solani earlier this week. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the league in general. Scott Burnside up next to start hour number 3 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
On the Curve, on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
Hour number 3 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290, of course online at tsn1290.ca. Drew Mindell, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
pleased to welcome back to the program from ESPN.com senior writer Scott Burnside. Scott, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Ah, my pleasure. I'm always better in the third hour than in the first hour. This is a good spot for me.
You know, the problem with that is so are we, which really makes the first couple hours bad listening for the audience.
I'm sure that's not the case, but I'm glad to be part of the anchor hour.
Appreciate your time this morning, Scott. You know, brought you on, obviously, to talk about the NHL in general, but I want to start with a fantastic article you wrote for ESPN.com a couple days ago, and we'll tweet out a link to it, because anytime you say the words Timu Solani in Winnipeg, there's, of course, a great deal of interest, and you went and you spent some time with Timu, living the good life in Laguna Beach, California. You know, when you spent the time with Timu and you went to his restaurant, Solani Steak Tavern, you know, did you get the sense in spending time with Timu that this is a guy who is comfortable in his own skin, who is comfortable in his retirement from the league after sort of the will he, won't he drama of the last few years of his career? Maybe not drama, that's not the right word. But did you get the sense that Timu Solani is a guy who is comfortable in his own skin and comfortable living the life he's now living?
Oh, my goodness, yeah. One of the great parts of spending that time with Timu is that, you know, that he was always one of the guys, and you guys would know this too, but, you know, when you went into a dressing room when he was playing, you know, he was a joy to be around, right? Because for the most part, loved every single moment that he had the skates on his feet. And that's why, you know, we talked very candidly about, you know, how difficult it was to leave the game because he was having so darn much fun, right? Even after the Ducks won the Cup in 07, to play for, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 more years or whatever it was. And for me, what the interesting part was, you know, sometimes when you encounter recently retired players, that transition is not always easy. And filling the void of, you know, competing and being in the dynamic of the dressing room and traveling and, you know, that's the thing that 99% of players miss, right? They miss that camaraderie. And when you spend any time with Timu, especially at his restaurant, it's like it's just a different locker room for him, right? Just smells a lot better. It's, you know, the food's way better than it is in the locker room. And for me, what he said, you know, if I knew I was going to have as much fun in retirement as I'm having, I might have retired 2 or 3 years earlier. And I think that's a testament to a guy who's made pretty good life choices. And you know, it was refreshing to spend that kind of time with him.
You know, Scott, I thought you guys had a really interesting morning roundtable earlier in the week talking about who is the most clutch NHL player right now, and Craig Custance was in there, Joe McDonald was in there. You picked Patrick Kane, and Patrick Kane burned the Jets pretty bad last night. I don't know if you saw the highlights, but everybody seems to be talking about the East, including us, as far as, you know, who are the Stanley Cup contenders right now. Are we overlooking the Chicago Blackhawks, or are they exactly where we thought they would be?
Well, you know, I think what we've learned about the Blackhawks and watching them win 3 Stanley Cups since 2010 is that it's not like they are disrespectful or disregard the regular season, but I think we put the Kings in this category until the last couple of years, is that they were a team that, you know, had a very good sense of self. And so, you know, they didn't necessarily need to win the Central Division or win a President's Trophy to be where they wanted to be come playoff time. Now, no, this is the Blackhawks team coming off a one-and-done, a rare one-and-done playoff year last year, losing that, you know, what dramatic playoff series against St. Louis in the first round. You know, Stan Bowman continues to work wonders as the GM of the Blackhawks, right? He's remade that team 2 or 3 times, frankly, since they won the first cup in 2010. They're very young up front. I know he talked to my colleague Pierre LeBrun this past week and continues to try and downplay the idea that he's going to, you know, go back into the trade market. Of course, a year ago, we know, and your people know very well, that Andrew Ladd going there didn't work out the way he wanted to. And I think there's a lot of debate about whether, you know, a guy like Patrick Sharp, you know, on a very disappointing Dallas team, you know, is he a guy who could be repatriated to provide some veteran ballast up front because they are so young, especially in that, you know, in that four-line group up front. But they are right now playing the kind of hockey that makes you wonder. And it's a great point. I think there's a tremendous battle ahead. You know, who knows how it turns out. But, you know, the Minnesota Wild are a different Minnesota Wild team than we've seen in the past. And the goaltending, the depth along the blue line, good balance, lots of speed up front. You know, it's not hard to imagine a second-round Minnesota-Chicago series that you know, has the potential to be epic. Because I think those are the two teams right now, with all due respect to, you know, San Jose and Anaheim, I think Minnesota-Chicago right now are the cream of the Western Conference. And to your point, you know, it's been easy to be a little bit dismissive of the Western Conference this year because we haven't had that sort of big boy powerhouse team that has, you know, set the standard, which we've seen in the past from whether it was Chicago or Los Angeles or whatever. I think these two teams right now, Minnesota and Chicago, I think you have to put them in the same category as a Washington, a Pittsburgh. You know, Columbus has fallen off a little bit, the New York Rangers in that group. But, yeah, I think it's too early to be too dismissive of the Western Conference, and definitely Chicago. You just know that you're going to get a handful from them. They have, you know, they are what they are, regardless of how much use is in that lineup today, and they are going to be a handful come playoff time.
Scott, you spent time with Sidney Crosby earlier this week and wrote an article about him as he neared his 1,000th point plateau. And did you get a sense when you spent time with him that he's a player who still has so many goals ahead of him?
Oh, yeah. No, I don't think – you know, I mean, it's interesting when you talk to a player, and especially – you know, I guess I'm old too, I guess, but, you know, when I, you know, having been at Crosby's first game in New Jersey and back in 05, 06, and, you know, having followed, you know, his arc, not just as a player in terms of what he's accomplished, and, of course, two gold medals and a World Cup of Hockey championship and the two Stanley Cups and all that kind of stuff, but just the evolution of a guy and his personality and where he fits into the game. And so I always enjoy talking to Sidney Crosby because he's now at a point in his career that, you know, he'll talk to you about, you know, the idea of maybe having kids and what it would mean to him to have them watch him play or how that would fit given where he's at in his career and what happens after his contract. You know, he'll be 37 at the end of the deal, you know, winning a second Stanley Cup and how it taught him that there isn't a blueprint. Like, you don't win every cup the exact same way, right? You couldn't replicate what happened in 09. And transferred to 2016. You had to do it a different way. So you don't spend much time around him or watch him play much without understanding that there is still an incredible drive. I'm sure he would never publicly say, yeah, I'd like to beat Connor McDavid and win a scoring title. But I think he is juiced by the idea of there's so many good young players in the league, and Connor is one of them. You know, Austin Matthews, Patrick Laine, all those players now that we spend a lot of time and should be spending a lot of time talking about. I think he loves the idea that, hey, wait a minute, you know, I'm not quite done yet, right? He's not yet 30 years old, still a lot of miles to travel. You know, he wants to go back to the Olympics, would love a shot next year in South Korea to make it 3 straight Olympic golds in a row, which would be an incredible accomplishment. This isn't a guy who's ready to ride peacefully off into the hockey sunset, which is good for the game, right? I mean, and, you know, spending some time with Alexander Ovechkin earlier in the year, as he approached his own 1,000-point plateau, you know, same thing, different dynamics for him. Of course, he hasn't won a cup, but both those guys still want desperately to, you know, stay at the top of the heap. And I think that creates a really fun dynamic for hockey fans, regardless of whether you're a fan of the Penguins or the Caps specifically.
ESPN senior writer Scott Burnside joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Scott, on a weekly basis, you sort of do a hot or not of the best under 24 NHL players. And of course, the Jets have a litany of players who would qualify for that. You know, Mark Scheifele has been featured there before, Nikolaj Ehlers. And this past week, Patrick Laine was listed under the not category in response to the situation on Tuesday night against the Minnesota Wild, where Paul Maurice elected to bench his young superstar following a first period turnover that led to a Minnesota Wild goal. From an outsider's point of view, because we know that that caused a national crisis here in Winnipeg, from an outsider's point of view, what did you think of Paul Maurice's decision to sit down the young Winnipeg Jets sniper for much of the second and third period following that turnover?
Yeah, I don't know which I like more, his decision on the ice time and the benching, or his response to it afterwards, where he joked that he'd sent Patrick Laine was going to the minors, and I think these are tremendous lessons, and I don't know that there are many coaches around the NHL, you'd like to think there aren't, that wouldn't take those moments, a teachable moment, as it were, and make that impression on a young player who, this is an interesting season for the Jets because they don't look much like a playoff team right now, again, which has to be disappointing. But there is so much promise there, and I think when you look around at young teams that are trying to emerge, you look at the dramatic evolution in Toronto under Mike Babcock and with those young players, there's still lots of tough love. Bruce Boudreau is an interesting guy in Minnesota. Guys, they see their ice time and their roles. A guy like Charlie Coyle, I think of from Minnesota. Play well, you get the ice time. You don't play well, you make mistakes. We have to pull in the reins, and those are lessons that young players have to learn. And I think, I give Paul Maurice full credit because it's easy not to, right? I mean, you're desperate for wins. You're desperate for what Patrick Laine brings every time he's on the ice. But these are important lessons to be learned. And I think, the fact that Patrick Laine, who, we know when he had points in 8 straight games or whatever before a couple, a 2-game drought going into last night, these are important messages to be sent. And, I look at Philadelphia. Dave Hastel's done a nice job in Philadelphia, very young team, and that's a team that looks like it's going to play itself under the playoffs this year. But he hasn't been shy to bench Shane Gostar, Travis Konechny before he got hurt, both talented young players that were important to their playoff hopes, that he had them in the press box. And I think that those are important lessons to be learned. And I think that Patrick Laine will likely learn from his lesson.
Scott, Detroit Red Wings and Detroit Tigers owner Mike Ilitch passed away yesterday. In your experiences covering hockey, can you just talk about his legacy and your own personal memories of Mike Ilitch?
Yeah, it's interesting because when I first made the transition from news to sports, it was in the Detroit market. And I was working at the Windsor Star. I was a columnist there. And my first 2 years in sports were in 97 and 98, which, of course, were marked by back-to-back Stanley Cup wins by the Red Wings. And, you spend time over time in that city and you watch, it's a hard place. And there have been lots of upheaval, political, economic, all those things in that city. And one constant was the Ilitch family and their support of specifically the Tigers and the Red Wings, but the city as a whole. And what stood out for me, I remember being at the Winter Classic in January 2014 at the Big House in Ann Arbor. And, huge deal for Detroit and Toronto, massive audience. But one thing that Mike Ilitch was very clear about as the planning went into that was that he very much insisted that there was a strong Detroit component to it. And so instead of having alumni events and things like that out in Ann Arbor, he insisted that Comerica Park, the new Tigers home at the time, that would be a focal point for much of the weekend celebrations. And it was really, it was critically important to him that that happened because it was very much a Detroit event. And I thought that, that tells you what you need to know about Ilitch and his family. The Red Wings will move into a new arena in Midtown / downtown Detroit next year, long awaited, much needed for that franchise. And it's going to be a real shame that Mike Ilitch won't be there to see it open, but a guy who was tireless in his support of a city, at times where there wasn't a lot of support for it. And definitely, I know he's considered one of the great sports owners, maybe of all time, pan sports. But certainly, when you talk about hockey specifically, he will be much missed and is deservedly so much revered around the hockey world.
Scott, transitioning back to the game, you wrote an article about fighting in hockey and what role does it have? Were you surprised by the reactions from some of the players and what they had to say about where fighting is gone and where they see it in the game still?
Yeah, maybe a little bit. Maybe because I honestly spend so little time thinking about fighting because it is sort of organically being weeded out of the game and becomes so much less a part of the daily discussion. The health part of it, that you still in the concussions, those are still important issues, but fact that we see so many fewer fights than we used to, I think it's less of a talking point. But I guess I was surprised that there are still so many players who like the idea that fighting is still a component, that, you know, even if it's more rare now, they don't mind the idea of two guys going at it to settle a score or to settle things down or to, you know, create some sort of equilibrium in a game that may be getting out of control. And I don't dispute that those are honest and true reflections of how they feel. I guess I was just surprised that it's still, you know, that they believe that it's still that part of it. I use my air quotes here, the culture of the game. So maybe that was a bit surprising to me, you know, that there are so many players who are still very much at ease or comfortable with the fact that fighting still does have a place or a role in the game, even if that place and role is far diminished than what it was 10 or 15 or 20 years ago.
Scott Burnside is an ESPN senior writer. He covers the NHL. Scott, really appreciate your time and your insight this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Anytime, guys.
Take care, Scott. Thanks again. Let's head to break. When we return, the Jets' opponent on Tuesday night is the very disappointing Dallas Stars. We'll talk about the Stars' season and where they go from here next on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Still to come, the bottom of the hour, Alex Pruitt from Sports Illustrated is going to join us. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, her final night in town. You've seen her on Late Night with Conan O'Brien. You've seen her on Baskets, currently on the FX network, starring opposite Zach Galifianakis and Louis Anderson. You can see her next year in Spider-Man Homecoming. Martha Kelly, her final night in town. Two shows, 7:15 and 10 p.m. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com.
Drew, when you were younger, did you ever have a basket on your bike?
No, I never had a basket on my bike. Did you?
No. I had a bell, though.
A bell just to bing, bing?
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, like when you had to pass people?
Yeah, I mean, back in the day, I mean, not to be, you know, I think that was more of a, for whatever reason, more of the quote-unquote girls' bikes would have had the basket in front.
Leave your misogyny at home.
Well, thank you. It's not misogyny. There's no hatred involved
in
that.
Yeah, men can have baskets,
they
too.
They can, if you remember the Seinfeld episode where
Kramer had the bike.
Kramer has the bike, and then Newman decides to split it in half. The old, was that a King Solomon?
Kramer.
If you remember our biblical references.
The bike is yours.
That's right, because he didn't want to see the bike harmed, so he knew that Kramer deserves the bike more than Elaine. It's a King Solomon, Jerry. A King Solomon. Anyways, the Dallas Stars, they come to Winnipeg on Tuesday night, I believe, the final meeting of the season between these two Central Division rivals. And as disappointing a year as it has been for the Jets, and make no mistake, it certainly has been, it's been equally disappointing, if not more, for the Dallas Stars. Last year's Central Division winning team is 2 points behind the Jets. They are 8 points behind a playoff spot with 27 games to go in their season. At season's end, Ezzy, if the Dallas Stars don't stage a pretty impressive turnaround at this point in time, where are you laying the blame for the Dallas Stars' struggles? Is this something that needs to fix itself with a coaching change? Is this Jim Nill's error in going with the same lousy goaltending duo that they did last season? Who bears the brunt of the responsibility for the Dallas Stars' struggles this season?
Yeah, it's a very good question, and when you think about all of the high-powered offensive weapons that the Dallas Stars have with Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin and Jason Spezza, Patrick Eves is having a great year. Patrick Sharp is a great player, even though he missed a lot of time early on in the season. Yuri Hudler, I thought, was a good acquisition for the Stars. When you think about all of these great players that the Stars have, throw in John Klingberg, a guy who puts up a lot of offensive numbers on the back end. It's amazing that the Dallas Stars are 8 points behind a playoff spot, Drew, but I think, you know, part of the blame has to lie with Jim Neal. I mean, the goaltending, they have a lot of money tied up in their goaltenders. What is it, $11 million, $12 million with Antti Niemi and Kari Lehtinen, and both of those goaltenders' numbers haven't been good this year. So I think part of it has to do with the fact that Jim Neal didn't go out and acquire a goaltender, and that was a big problem for the Stars in last year's playoffs, if you remember.
Sure.
Lehtinen and Niemi, when one struggled, the other really couldn't pick up the slack. So I think that's partly the problem. But and you know, Lindy Ruff, a lot of people are talking about, you know, Lindy Ruff's job might be in jeopardy, and that could be the case. I really like Lindy Ruff as a coach. I think he did a great job with the Buffalo Sabres for many years. But I really know that, you know, coaches don't want to use this as an excuse, but the amount of injuries that they had early in the season, I don't think any team can really survive that. They missed Cody Eakin for a big majority of the season. We talked about Sharp and Hudler, but hey, I mean, every team deals with it. The Jets deal with it. But I certainly don't think that the defense has been as good as it was in previous years. They lost guys like Alex Goligoski, Drew, Jason Demers, Chris Russell.
Yeah.
And so they've relied on younger defensemen, Esa Lindell, Steven Johns. They've relied on guys like Patrick Nemeth. So, I mean,
John Klingberg has had a bad year. He's
sure.
taken a step back.
Yeah, and he had a crazy year last year. So I don't know if anybody expected him to necessarily duplicate that in his third year in the NHL. Certainly had a good game the last time the Stars played the Jets. So I think it's a combination of factors. But as far as, you know, is Lindy Ruff's job in jeopardy, it might be. I mean, I picked the Stars to win the Cup this year.
Yeah, that was a
poor
decision.
And I wasn't the only one.
You were the only one in this room.
Well, I wasn't the only one, you know, as far as, you know, people picking the Stars.
Look, the Stars.
How many people, put it this way, Drew, how many people picked the Stars to miss the playoffs? I would say zero.
I would agree with you that most people would have said that the Dallas Stars are clearly, if not a Stanley Cup winning team, but they're clearly a playoff team after the season they had last year. The problem with the Stars, as much as this year appears to be a write-off at this point in the season, the problem is that both Lehtinen and Niemi are under contract for next year.
Yes.
At a total cap hit of $10.4 million.
Right.
Meaning, and they can't go, it's just like the Jets can't go back with Hellebuck and Hutchinson next season. The Stars can't go back with Lehtinen and Niemi. They have to figure out they have to either buy out one of those guys, or they have to eat the contract and send it down through the minors because nobody's taking that contract off waivers. You're just going to have to eat it as a bad decision, and Jim Neal has to hope that, you know, the ownership there doesn't hold it against them for spending money in an obviously imprudent manner. Dave, how do you see the Dallas Stars situation sort of playing itself out over the next, you know, off season and then into next year?
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head, Drew. I think that they have to address, similar to the Jets, they have to address their goaltending situation. They can't, you know, the status quo doesn't work with Dallas, especially because they've got an even older core than Winnipeg. So you're looking at those guys and you're thinking to yourself, well, you can't rest on your laurels. You can't sit back and say, okay, well, you know, hopefully we can get it figured out. You know what you have in these goalies. One of them would be a suitable backup, but you need a bona fide starter. And like the truth is, and we talked about Marc-Andre Fleury, but would Marc-Andre Fleury look, you know, nice and steady for Dallas right now?
Of course.
And so, you know, you're thinking to yourself, like, Dallas, you know, with, as Ezzy already listed off all the talent that they have on this team, you have to address that concern, because that is your big Achilles heel right now. And again, we could be talking about the Jets. We're talking about Dallas. It's, you know,
the parallels are uncanny.
Yeah, I mean, and again, you know, Dallas again is more precarious in the sense that they have an older team. Mm-hmm. So you've got guys like, you know, unless you start to make trades, unless you start to trade off, you know, as we talked about earlier, a guy like Sharp going back to Chicago and start making some moves with some of your veteran players. But if you're prepared to ride the season out and kind of let it happen, and then going into next year, well, what's going to change? What would change next year from this year?
And Dave, it might be too late this year. I mean, they're 8 points back. They're not mathematically eliminated, Drew.
Nobody's
but
mathematically
if they have
eliminated.
27, well, Arizona and
Arizona
Colorado,
and Colorado are fine.
But
yeah.
But when you're talking about with 27 games remaining, do the Stars have to win 20 of those 27 games? I mean, it's going to be very difficult.
They have to go on a similar streak to what the Jets would have to go on, and there's been no evidence in the course of the season that these teams can turn it around at the drop of a hat. I mean, you know, when you've played 55, you know, 56, 57 games, pretty much you are what you are. it's not like they're expecting, you know, an influx of talent at this point in time, just like the Jets aren't expecting an influx of talent. You are what you are. You're not a playoff team. You know, you have to regroup and retool. I mean, Dallas...
To me, that's the biggest shock of the entire season. The fact that Dallas and Tampa Bay are going to miss the playoffs. I would throw Florida in there because I think this is the first year the two teams that I predicted to meet in the Stanley Cup Finals might both miss the playoffs.
That takes an impressive... That's an impressive level. I'll tell you what. If Ezzie predicts your team next year to be a Stanley Cup contender, just immediately go to Vegas and bet on that on that team. Bet against that team immediately. Anybody but that team is how it's going to play out. Alex Pruitt of Sports Illustrated joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
On TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
Thunder.
Please don't sing. We ask you every week, just please don't sing. Nobody enjoys it. You can hear the audience turning their radios off when you start with that, so please don't sing. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 11:34 in the morning on Saturday, the 11th of February. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose News is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome to the program from Sports Illustrated, Alex Pruitt. Alex, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Morning.
Alex, obviously, you're based in Washington. You spend a lot of time covering the Washington Capitals as well as the NHL as a whole. We'll start with the Capitals as they enter tonight's action as the clear runaway, you know, winner of the Metropolitan Division right now. 8 points up on the Pittsburgh Penguins, 9 on the Columbus Blue Jackets. Both teams, of course, having tremendous seasons on their own. Does that just exemplify just how good this Washington Capitals team has been all season, that they are handily ahead of both the Penguins and the Capitals, even though you would say that the Penguins and the Capitals have had excellent seasons?
Yeah, and I would throw the Rangers in there too.
Sure.
I think they're 11 points up on the Rangers, and the Rangers at this point would be leading the Atlantic Division with games in hand, but as it is that they're fourth in the first wild card spot. I mean, it's been a ridiculous division, and yeah, the fact it's not just the fact that Washington's so far ahead. It's really how they've been doing it. I think it's 10 straight games at home now that they've scored 5-plus goals, which is the first and only time that's happened since, like, 1970. So, I mean, they're putting up really preposterous offensive numbers, and Holpe's on an absolute roll. I think he's probably pulled himself even with Devin Dubnyk in terms of the Vezina conversation at this point, or at least he's creeping up right behind him. And it's just it's been an all-around effort. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with their depth when Andrei Burakovsky's been out now. He hurt his hand recently. I think he blocked a shot with his hand the most recent game against Detroit, and he's going to be out a little while. So his line with Eller and Brett Connolly was, you know, one of the best lines in hockey for a while in terms of, you know, goal differential, and I think they had, you know, something insane like 17 goals in 17 games between the three of them. So interested to see how that shakes things up, but their top six remains intact. They've been extremely, extremely healthy this year, still the fewest man games lost in the entire league by a wide margin. So that's contributed some to it, but they're really clicking. I mean, they're a really fun team to watch right now.
Alex, you've covered the Capitals for some time now, and you know, last year they had 120 points. They won the President's Trophy, but they weren't able to go as far as they wanted in the playoffs. What have you seen that's different about this group this year, and how much motivation is there to finally get past the Pittsburgh Penguins and get to the Stanley Cup Final?
No more motivation than there's probably been for a while. I mean, this has been their issue, right? It's every year it's more and more. The regular season matters less and less for this team as time goes on because – you know, they shattered all those records last year, all those franchise records, and they ran away with the President's Trophy. They were pretty much going to take it by, like, you know, mid-February by this point last year. And then they kind of ran into some, I think, a little bit of complacency issues, a little bit of stagnancy, just because they were so far ahead, they didn't have a heck of a lot to play for. So they were a little bit on the downside going into the playoffs, and Pittsburgh, you know, obviously was surging ever since Mike Sullivan took over. So I think as far as, you know, this year and past teams, they're deeper for sure. That Eller-Burkowski Connolly line is a level of speed they have in the bottom six that they've never really had before. You know, it's not to say that guys like Mike Richards and Jason Chimera, who were there last year, aren't fast, but these guys play pretty fast with the puck, and they have some pretty good skill. I mean, you know, Connolly's former top 10 pick there, who's kind of found a home on a really good $850,000 contract for them. I think they've done a good job with these new defensive pairs that they've had. They kind of shook them up a little bit. I think Dmitry Orlov has really come into his own as a top four defenseman there, and then that's allowed Brooks Orpik to take more sheltered minutes with a really good puck mover like Nate Schmidt in the third pair there. So, and then, you know, Holtby's just as good. So, yeah, I mean, there are a lot of similarities, but I think all in all, the scoring is a little more balanced out. And you know, when you project in the playoffs, I mean, that's the reason they lost to Pittsburgh last year. It wasn't, you know, power versus power with the Crosby beating Backstrom. It was the opposite, really, in that series. What did them in was that Hagelin-Bonino-Kessel line, and then that fair Cullen-Kunackle line in the bottom six. That was depth that Washington couldn't really match as far as skill and puck possession. But I think they have the horses this year.
Alex, switching over to the West Coast, you wrote an article about Peter Budaj and his resurgence and what he's meant to the LA Kings, and he's probably been one of the best stories of the NHL and how he's managed to come back and kind of resurrect his career. I'm not sure if probably my favorite part might have been the Ned Flanders part of the helmet, but what did you think talking to Peter Budaj and getting exposed to him a little bit and what it's meant to him to be able to, you know, have this resurrection?
Yeah, he's very aware of where he came from and how close he was to being out of the game, I think, a couple years ago. When you think back to after his time, you know, he gets traded from Montreal to Winnipeg, and Winnipeg immediately sends him down to St. John's. And, you know, he's very open about saying that was bottom for him. He goes to St. John's, he doesn't win a single game the entire year, and then no one wants him. And he ends up just kind of by this connection he has to Dusty Imu, who's the goalie coach, or became the goalie coach for the Kings. The Kings affiliate in Ontario. He was his goalie coach in St. John's, and he kind of recommended him, and LA took a look and just brought him in on a tryout. And just by virtue of some circumstances, be it injury or, you know, J.F. Berube getting claimed on waivers, he finds himself with a shot and he takes advantage of it. And then he just kind of keeps climbing. So I think he hasn't really forgotten how bad things were a couple years ago, because it's still fresh in his mind. But now that he's on the other side, he's able to appreciate it.
Alex Pruitt of Sports Illustrated, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Alex, you look at, you know, we're talking to you now about the Western Conference, and you look at both the Minnesota Wild and the Chicago Blackhawks, and they're, you know, by points, the two best teams in the West. Is this the year that the Minnesota, and, you know, do you believe that the Minnesota Wild are more than just sort of a good regular season team? You know, obviously Bruce Boudreau is a tremendous regular season coach. His first season in Minnesota now, after having so much regular season success but playoff disappointment with the Anaheim Ducks. Do you see the Wild being built for a longer playoff run than maybe some of Bruce Boudreau's teams in Anaheim?
I was talking with some folks in D.C. who obviously know Bruce pretty well from his time there. And their theory is that his past issues in the playoffs, if he's had any from behind the bench, have come in the department of goalie management, you know, choosing, overanalyzing who to pick, or, well, you know, going back and forth between goalies or something like that. And I admittedly, I should have gone back and looked at, you know, looked at the evidence and tried to come up with better examples. But the point was that that does not exist here, that Devan Dubnyk is the guy and he's going to be the guy barring injury. So there's absolutely no, you know, no cause for second pause there. You know, you just throw them out there and you go. And you know, they're an extremely deep team up front. I think that's been their hallmark all year. They don't necessarily have, you know, the big name superstars. They're a little bit like Columbus, I think, in that way. But the way that Bruce has them playing and the right buttons he's pushed, whether it's forming that Koivu, Granlund, Zucker line that's been insane, or you know, on and on the line. I think he's done a pretty good job of putting the right pieces in place. So, yeah, I mean, look, the West is wide open this year. You know, you said yourself that they're first by, what, 5 points in Chicago right now, but everyone's kind of in the thick of it, especially in the Pacific, San Jose, Anaheim, and Edmonton. So I don't know. It's really hard. The West is really hard to predict right now. It's you know, even a team lurking down like LA, if they hit their stride, you know, maybe Quick comes back and some of their puck possession turns into a benefit in the playoffs. I mean, maybe they're coming. I don't know. It's very hard to predict right now. But you have to look at it right now and say that with the goalie that they have there, and with the way that they've been playing under Bruce, that's as good a team to pick as any right now in Minnesota.
Alex, we were talking about Marc-Andre Fleury earlier in the show, and a lot of Jets fans really want Kevin Cheveldayoff to acquire him based on the fact that the Jets goalies haven't had the best year and Connor Hellebuyck hasn't been pushed that much. When you look at Pittsburgh's situation, Marc-Andre Fleury's got a no-movement clause. We have the expansion draft coming up. What do you see happening there?
I wish I had some sort of insight into it from the inside in Pittsburgh there. I've just been looking at it from afar like you guys. So, I mean, the options, right, are buy him out or let him get plucked. Or, I mean, he would have to waive it, right? Or you have to convince him to waive it. So that's the big issue is trying to find a home at the right price if you do think that you want to move him right now. But, you know, as we saw last year in the playoffs, it really helps to have two good goalies. Things happen, guys go down. So I could also see them standing pat and trying to figure it out once they try to make another run here.
Alex, earlier this week, Washington had Fatima Al-Ali as part of Hockey is for Everyone. She's a player from the United Arab Emirates that Peter Bonder, I believe, saw working her skills over there, and they brought her in to meet Ovechkin and the team. What was that like in Washington? How was that received?
Oh, it was crazy. I'd never seen more cameras at a practice before in February. I mean, like CNN was there, CBS Evening News was there. I mean, they're not coming out to, you know, talk to Alex Ovechkin, you know, as popular as he is. I mean, the whole reason this happened was because this incredibly skilled woman from United Arab Emirates goes to a camp and Peter Bondra sees her. And, you know, I think she's been making the rounds here in D.C. Was at the Mystics game yesterday, or Mystics practice yesterday. Maybe she went to the Wizards game. I'm not sure. But, I mean, yeah, wasn't that really cool to see? Mm-hmm. Love that selfie of her with Zetterberg and Ovechkin before the game. I mean, that was kind of that's what the Hockey is for Everyone month is about, right? It's stories like that.
Alex, we'll let you go on this last question. We know that for years the bugaboo of the Washington Capitals and the bugaboo of Alex Ovechkin in particular has been the Pittsburgh Penguins, has been Sidney Crosby. Why is this year that, you know, if these two teams meet in the playoffs, why is this the year that the Washington Capitals will be able to get over that hump and defeat the Pittsburgh Penguins?
They might not be. I don't know. if you're gonna project and say that they will, I guess it would be on the back of their depth scoring. I don't think that they were that far off from them last year. I was of the opinion that second round matchup was the Stanley Cup final, and it, with the way the standings are right now, it very well might be again. Maybe Pittsburgh's mileage catches up to them projecting there. But at the same time, Washington has been incredibly healthy. So maybe their fortune turns. I don't know. It's hard to predict. Those two teams are very even. They're very, very even. I do think Holpe's at the top of his game right now. So maybe you give them an edge there. And with the way Washington's lines have been clicking, for sure, if you project that in the playoffs and assume that they can continue that, it's been pretty clear that they're the top of the class in the NHL right now. So if they play like that, sure, yeah. I don't see why this can't be the year.
Alex Pruitt covers the NHL for Sports Illustrated. Alex, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Yep, see you.
Take care. Let's head to break. When we come back, one final segment. We'll talk about the Jets and the Lightning tonight again. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Here's the thing, I think, for Stan Bowman and Chicago Blackhawks, and he has said this publicly as recently as last week in Chicago, he doesn't think he's going to be a big player this year. I know we all say, yeah, right. But I think in this case, he spent a lot of future picks in the last few years trying to get good at the deadline. I think he's going to be more patient. I don't see a fit right now.
TSN insider Pierre Lebrun discussing the upcoming trade deadline. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show featuring three Canadian idiots, Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Minuk. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Gentlemen, an updated TSN hockey trade bait board. Kevin Shattenkirk continues to lead, I suppose. Is it leading if you're at the top of the trade bait board?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not 100% sure. From a Jets perspective, I think what's most interesting is that Matthew Perreault, who I would say somewhat inexplicably was always in the top five or top 10 of the trade bait candidates, has plummeted down the list to 21st overall. As it was, we never really understood why Matthew Perreault was ranked so highly to begin with. And now it seems as though that is catching up to those who put together the trade bait board, as Perreault back to 21st among candidates to be traded at the upcoming trade deadline.
I think one of the reasons why, and Drew, you know this, because there's a chance that if the Jets don't protect him,
yeah,
he could be exposed, and then instead of losing him, they might trade him.
Yeah,
I'm not saying that I would trade Perreault or Perreault will be traded, but I think that's the reason why TSN has him there.
I understood it from the Jets' perspective. I never understood why any team would be interested in acquiring Matthew Perreault, giving up an asset to get him at this point in the season, having to then presumably protect him, unless you were going to acquire him and not protect him and hope that he just helps your team from now until the end of the playoffs. I just thought it was always I think this is going to be, I would be surprised if there's anybody traded really at the trade deadline that has years left on their contract.
Right, and that's why we've said this for 2 months now.
Mm-hmm.
Drew Stafford is a better candidate to be traded. And
sure,
again, I have no problem with Drew Stafford. I think he's a good veteran player, but he's a pending UFA. And when you consider there are guys like Jack Roslovic and Kyle Connor and Nick Petan who have maybe started to challenge more for a regular spot in the lineup. Nick Petan obviously is already with the Jets, but Roslovic and Connor are with the Moose right now. Does Stafford factor into the long-term plans? I don't know. I don't think he does.
I don't think he does either. I mean, he's a UFA at season's end. I don't see the Jets being that interested in bringing him back because, you know, he just is a roadblock, I guess, for any of those that young talent that's coming through. Unless you think that, you know, Roslovic and Connor need another year of seasoning in the AHL next year, in which case maybe you bring him back or you bring back a similar veteran on a one-year deal to, again, insulate the young players, something the Jets have failed to do. Well, not the Jets. Kevin Cheveldayoff, spade is a spade. Kevin Cheveldayoff has failed to insulate his young players for the last 2 years. Maybe he realizes that, you know, the third year is the charm, and it's time to provide that, you know, depth protection, be it on the back end, be it among your forward group. Dallas Stars, we talked about them a couple segments ago. I see them being quite possibly busy at this upcoming trade deadline, given that they have a number of guys who are UFAs. You know, they have six forwards, and Johnny Oduya on the back end as pending UFAs. So a guy like Patrick Sharp, who is certainly at the tail, you know, towards the end of his career, but, you know, I think you put him into the right situation. He's had a terrible year with injuries and everything else. I think he could be an attractive option for some teams at the trade deadline. Not going to cost a lot because he's a pure rental and he's certainly a diminished asset. But a guy like Patrick Sharp, who's been there and been in big games and has scored big goals for the Chicago Blackhawks all those years during the Cup Finals, I think he could be an interesting name to watch for at the trade deadline. Same with Johnny Oduya. Oduya, also 35 years old, on the IR right now, but presumably healthy by the time the trade deadline rolls around. A veteran defenseman, not going to cost a lot in terms of acquiring him. He's another guy I think a team that's looking to add depth to their back end would be interested in on March 1st.
Yeah, and Oduya has slowed down a little bit. He's not as mm-hmm. effective as he once was, but you know, Patrick Sharp is an interesting one. We had Scott Burnside on about 45 minutes ago,
yeah,
and he mentioned that Chicago could be looking to bring Patrick Sharp back, as you said, Drew, to kind of give that veteran scoring presence on the third line. Most likely he doesn't play in the top six, but a guy like Sharp could play in the top six. We know that Sharp and Taves have played, have a lot of familiarity with each other, and,
sure,
and you've got Nick Schmaltz up there with Richard Panik on the top line with Jonathan Taves, so I could see Sharp being a fit with Chicago. But again, you know, we were talking about Dallas a couple of segments ago. It's unbelievable that we're talking about the Dallas Stars as sellers,
sure,
but the reality is they're 8 points behind that last wild card spot right now held by the LA Kings.
Well, they have three weeks to turn it around. I mean, clearly, if they don't turn it around in the next, you know, 2 weeks,
yeah,
then they're going to have to put a for sale sign on pretty much, you know, and not just a few of their players. It's an astounding number of players that have, you know, Sharp is a UFA. Alex Hemsky is a UFA, another guy who's been banged up and injured all season long. Yuri Hudler, UFA, very disappointing year. Patrick Eves is a very affordable.
Eves has had a great season, and he's been playing on the top line.
And you only cost $1 million for Patrick Eves.
Yep.
So that's a guy who would certainly be, I think, an easy fit into a lot of team salary cap situations, and a guy who, while 32 years old, knows how to get it done. You know, been playing with some of the Stars' best players this year.
Yeah, and we know the Canadians are one team in the East that are expected to be pretty active, and that's why Matthew Perreault's name was linked to the Montreal Canadiens. I don't know if that's necessarily going to be a good fit for them, but certainly, you know, you mentioned some of the players that the Stars have. We know that the Colorado Avalanche, you know, speaking of this trade bait board, to me, the two most interesting names, guys, are still Kevin Shattenkirk and Matt Duchene. I mean, those are big-time players that can have an impact. If you're able to acquire one of those players, I mean, that can significantly change your fortunes. Shattenkirk is a top offensive defenseman who's gotten better defensively, by the way. And Matt Duchene's a guy that's represented Canada at the Olympics, and he's an elite center who can also play the wing. So if you're a team right now that is comfortably in a playoff spot and you're looking to acquire a player to put you over the top, those two guys, to me, are still the big names. And, you know, approaching the trade deadline on March 1st, those are going to be the two guys that I'm most interested to see if they get moved. Because I think we expect certainly Shattenkirk to get moved, and Duchene, with Colorado way out of it and in rebuild mode already, I think there's a good chance Duchene gets traded too.
Yeah, we will find out, of course, in 18 days' time. That's the trade deadline, Wednesday, March 1st. Complete coverage here on TSN 1290, wrapping it up, of course, with that Wednesday edition of NHL This Week coming up Wednesday, March the 1st. Tonight's game, the Jets and the Lightning, a 6 o'clock puck drop at MTS Center. Jets have dropped the first two games on this four-game homestand. You know, to say it's a must-win is cliche, because pretty much every game, almost in the second half, since January 1st, has almost been must-win for this Jets team, given how significant their struggles have been. Interesting stat that was tweeted out by Rick Ralph. The Jets right now have the exact same record that they did at this time last season. So I think that tells you just how dire straits the Jets situation is right now in the Western Conference. You know, time is, if it's not already run out, you are down to your last few grains of sand in the hourglass for the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, I agree with you, Drew, and Jacob Trouba said it after the game yesterday. He said, expect a desperate game tonight, because we know that the Lightning are scratching and clawing and trying to stay relevant in the playoff race in the East, and the Jets are trying to do the exact same thing. So it'll probably be a pretty good game tonight.
Well, you know, it'll be, if it's anything like the game they played at the beginning of January.
And it's a nationally televised game.
Sure. If it's anything like the game they played at the beginning of January, it'll be an entertaining game at the very least, because that was a 6-4 game.
Yep.
Lots of offense, no goaltending. We've seen that as a pattern for both of these teams this year. Reminder about next Saturday in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, with the Jets and the Habs playing in Montreal at 1 o'clock. It's an early morning for us, boys. 7 a.m. next Saturday for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to the sponsors of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show: Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Big thank you to all of our guests: Alex Pruitt of Sports Illustrated, Scott Burnside of ESPN, Guy Flaming of the Pipecast Podcast, Mick Collagio of the Standard Times, and Joe Smith of the Tampa Bay Times. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. You can follow us on Twitter at illegalcurve, facebook.com/illegalcurve, and our website with the latest Jets and Moose news is illegalcurve.com. Big props to producer Rory, doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Hustler and Lawless coming up in a few hours here on your home for the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290.
As long as we sit together, the team will be all right.